know you're broken hearted, cause the peace you're hoping for is off the scenes apart.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to We Love No Other podcast from IlliniBoard.com. I am your host, Robert Rosenthal. I am out of hiding. the reason I say that is, I say that because Saturday was designed to break me, and then we added a coaching change on Sunday, and I go comatose. I mean, let me see if I can describe this. We have lost to Northwestern, I believe, 6 years in a row. Let me think of this. 2014, we won up there. That's our last win, right? 15, yes, we lost. 16, I know we lost. 17, yes. 18, yes. Yes, 6 years. I just wanted to mentally check that. 6 years in a row to Northwestern football, University of Illinois, the University of Illinois, six consecutive losses to the tiny purple school that didn't care about sports until around 1995. Six consecutive losses by the University of Illinois, the large, big state school, to the little private nerd school, has lost six times in a row in the sport of football, six consecutive times. Illinois, Northwestern, six. In basketball, despite leading, let's see, what did the series get? It was like 32, like it got to where it doubled, I believe. I believe the Bragging Rights series got to 2/3, 1/3 at one point. I believe, I don't have a computer in front of me, I don't have anything in front of me, so I'm doing this from memory, but I believe it got to 32-16. Illinois had won 32, Missouri had won 16. Of all-time matchups. It's not just matchups in St. Louis. But all-time matchups, it's 2/3 Illinois, 1/3 Missouri, and now we've lost three in a row, so it's probably 32-19. Like, the fact that we can have a streak of 9 wins in a row, we can have a streak of 8 wins in a row, and they've crept back to 32-19 is just disgusting. I mean, we just beat Duke and we're number 6 and we can't beat Missouri. Mark Smith, Jeremiah Tillman, and Javon Pickett get to win. They won one, okay? They won three straight years. They have these smug looks on their faces, and we cannot wipe said smug looks for three consecutive years, even when we're number 6 and they're unranked. Like, do you know, again, most people don't understand that rivalry for people like me who grew up in the Metro East and then lived in St. Louis for 25 years, and like, people don't really understand what it is, what it's like to face a Mizzou coworker on the morning, like the first morning after it. Again, last year, I think I even tweeted it. I went to the game, I got home from the game, and there's a tiger tail tied to the front door of my condo in St. Louis. like, it is insufferable, as it should be, and I would be doing the insufferable, hey, you guys have lost 9 in a row. Are you sure you want to play this one anymore? And instead, three straight losses to Smith, Tillman, and Pickett. That's a top 5 for me, gut punch, impossible to get over moment in Illini fandom. Like, I mean, just do this for me. Picture Mark Smith smiling right now, knowing that he won and we lost. Picture Mark Smith's glee of, I'm getting out of here, I don't like this coach, I'm going to go somewhere else, and I'm going to dominate them 3 years in a row. And he wins. We lose. Accepting that sends me into hiding. Thinking of Pat Fitzgerald smiling sends me into hiding. Thinking of a battle between Lovey and his longtime QB guy, Mike Bajakin, a battle of wits, and Northwestern comes away with 411 rushing yards because even though they don't run the ball very well, Northwestern said, oh, I know how to beat this defense. They're not going to adjust. Just do this. That stings, man. And then to have another coaching change, another it's failed, another we're 3 decades in and it's the same as it was when I arrived on campus in 1991. That is hard, man. Like, I don't know how you guys deal with stuff, or if I'm just crazy emotional, or if I care too much about those two games, Northwestern football and Missouri basketball. But Sunday morning was dark, man. We fire the coach. Jimmy Collins passed away, this legend in my mind, growing up as the guy who assembled all the talent for Henson and built the teams that made me an Illini fan. Like, you don't get darker than that. So I just shut it out. My son was here. He was in town from Idaho. He was getting some things. He had kind of somewhat temporarily moved out there, and then he met his future bride. They got married this summer. It's time for a full-time go in Idaho. So some things that were in storage back here, he needed to drive them out at some point, and he chose this weekend, and that's why he came into town. So I just, you know, on the personal side, it was great, and it's so good to, you know, I'm kind of a young guy to have an adult son getting married, but my situation is unique, and it, let me just tell you, for other people who haven't been through this, when you have a child come home with their bride from this summer that's still in the newlywed phase, and you get to hang out with them, and you haven't seen them in 6 months, or 5 months, whatever it is, and especially you toss in a pandemic where you haven't seen another human. I didn't leave the house from Sunday to Friday last week. I'm just, you know, wearing the same clothes and wandering around inside. So when you see actual other human people, and those people are people you love, and they are in love after just getting married, it is up there, man. So here I am, on this like personal high and this sports, like top three all-time low. That environment does not allow my brain to send words to my fingers out through a keyboard and onto the internet. I finally got around to writing last night, and it was hard, and that article took me 6 hours of edits and going back and forth, and I just couldn't get the words out, but I forced something out. And I hate it, and as I said in the article, like, I honestly get it if people want to, like, unsubscribe and, like, would like a refund. I have an Illinois sports website. We lose to Missouri. We lose to Northwestern. We fire the coach, and the site since blank with only, you know, a couple articles from other people for 36, 48 hours. I get it. It's stupid. But I'm just telling you here, I had nothing. I could not. All I could do was lean into the family stuff and just block out the fact that Mark Smith and Pat Fitzgerald win and we lose. That's hard, man. So, with that said, I wake up today and I have a little better perspective. I'm, maybe have grieved this and another failed attempt at building Illinois football, and I got the words out, and maybe that makes my stomach feel a little better in the morning. So I got up with a renewed interest in looking forward. And so what I did here is I recorded this morning a podcast with Ron Turner to just discuss the Illinois job, to discuss what it's like to recruit to Champaign, what he ran into 20 years ago, the pluses, the minuses, and at the end he tells a really great story about Instant Replay and the Big Ten, which if you don't listen to any other part of this, just fast forward to about probably 5 minutes left in the pod, and you'll hear this really great story about you know, the fumble calls against Michigan in 2000 and the process that began Instant Replay in the Big Ten, which is the process that began Instant Replay nationwide. It's pretty fascinating. So that's where I'm at. That's why I haven't been writing. I honestly feel like I need to apologize because you guys pay me to write words about Illinois sports and we change coaches and it takes me like 38 hours to even put my fingers to the keyboard. But that's me. And when, again, like it's all boiled down to Smith, Tillman, Pickett smiling and waving a trophy around in the air and Pat Fitzgerald smiling and waving a hat around in the air. And I am comatose. That kind of thing can just reduce me to rubble. So hopefully my brain is back and I'm ready to cover the basketball game tonight and I'm ready to talk coaching change. So first step is my interview with Ron Turner right now. Today, my guest is a former Illini coach. We're going to talk about the Illinois coaching job and what it's like and what, what are the prospects for this job. So Ron Turner is joining me today, Coach. I appreciate you doing this with me.
No problem, Robert. Okay. I'm happy to do it.
Okay, appreciate it. So we'll go right into it. The job is now open again. And so maybe the best place to start is what attracted you to the job in 1997. So you had been, you know, kind of all over the place at the time. I think you were Bears offensive coordinator for like 4 years. And then you took the job. So what was attractive about the job to you in 1997 at the time?
Well, a lot of things. First of all, I wanted to be a, head coach at a major university. That was probably number one. That was what one of my goals was. I had a great job with the Bears as offensive coordinator, with Dave Wannstedt and loved it there. But when this opportunity came up, to go to Illinois, it was one that I immediately got very interested in, for, again, a lot of reasons. It's a major university, great university academically. It's in the Big Ten Conference, one of the best conferences in football. And, it's about as high as it could get. So it was something that I was very interested in and didn't know a whole lot about all the inner workings. I knew about University of Illinois and the academics and football a little bit, but I didn't know, the details. So when I was contacted, I said, sure. So I met with Ron Gunther, the athletic director, and loved everything that he was saying about, the vision and what they wanted to do and where the program was going. And so it was something I was very excited about.
And what was, you say there's, I guess the kindest way to say it is there's certain, restrictions on the program, or there's certain difficulties for Illinois, obviously, that don't maybe exist elsewhere. So let's just get right into those. Like, what makes the job difficult, do you think? Like, what, obviously there's not the history that you have at other Big Ten programs, and what do you think are the things that prevent it from stepping up? Obviously, there are coaches that are hamstrung when they take the job, and you might have some insight on what some of those things are.
Yeah, I think probably the biggest thing is what you said, just the history and the tradition. There's some really good times, but it's kind of up and down. Some good years followed by some down years, which is exactly what happened when I was there. You build it and then it goes back down, then you're going to come back up. And so the challenge is just trying to get that consistency and getting at a program where it's, in the top of the Big Ten year in and year out. And when I was there, I think probably the biggest things that we were behind a little bit with facilities and some of those things. And they did build, Ron put together and they did a good job building the indoor facility when I was there. So that helped, but we're still behind, in facilities as to where other people are. I don't think they can say that anymore because the facilities right there are unbelievable.
Certainly.
As good as anybody in the country. So I think they've, especially since Josh has been there, I think they've addressed some of those issues that was maybe holding it back a little bit. And I think another thing is, you've got to recruit the state and got to recruit the state hard. We tried to do that, Illinois and then also the surrounding states, the neighboring states, Missouri. I talked about this at the clinic the other day, Missouri and Indiana and the neighboring states, going there and hit it hard. And one you know, tough part about Chicago getting all the top players, everybody goes in there. I mean, it's such a easy, I mean, people come from the West Coast and from Florida, from Texas, all over the place to come into Chicago. So you're battling, you know, some big name programs. And, you know, Notre Dame was one that was tough to beat. Ohio State would come in there, you know, and they would target the top guys and go after them. And I still think you can get some of them. You know, I can get all of them, but you can definitely get some of them. And you can get enough players from the state to win with, you know.
Yeah, and you would
I think that's one of the big challenges. It's so over-recruited.
Yeah.
You know, people get enamored by you know, some other so-called bigger programs with more a richer tradition and everything else. So I think that's probably one of the biggest things you're battling.
And in the clinic, you had mentioned how so much of your 2001 Sugar Bowl team was like Illinois based from, or at least either from Illinois, Indiana, or Missouri. That,
yes,
I believe it was your top two quarterbacks, your top three running backs, five of your six receivers, I think it was, or something like that, in the entire offensive line. I can't remember the
yeah,
stats
it was all the receivers, you know, the top six receivers and five of the six top offensive linemen guys that played and contributed a lot at that during that year. And the only one who wasn't was Jake Gulaga from Florida, and Dan Cutter was also from Florida, but at that point he ended up being a starter later on, but he wasn't at that time. So I think that was, you know, that was a big part of it, but it was, you know, it was the majority of them, the majority of the guys. And then I think in Illinois, you can, you know, spot recruit other places. You know, we had some key players from, you know, Muhammad Abdullah from New Jersey. You know, we had Mike Hall from, you know, California. So we had some guys from other places, you know.
Yeah.
Ty Myers was a big contributor from Ohio. But the bulk of them were from Illinois and really St. Louis and a little bit into Indiana.
So let's talk about some specifics, because you and I talked about Brandon Lloyd before, of, you know, from the Kansas City area, maybe not as highly recruited, but was being pursued. So, you know, what is it like to discover a player like that? Because obviously, you know, in the last 25 years, one of, if not the top wide receiver at University of Illinois, and the key to that offense, obviously, is Kitner to Lloyd. So that recruiting, discovering him, selling Illinois, what was that like?
Well, it was, you know, Brandon was a unique individual, very intelligent individual, and academics were important to him. And, but I will contradict a little bit what you said. He was heavily recruited.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the most heavily recruited guys, you know, I think that we got. I mean, it came down to really us and Notre Dame. And, you know, I know USC was on him. He had, you know, I think it was USC, might have been UCLA. He had, you know, quite a few big schools after him. So it was, you know, we were in a battle there. But Brandon was a guy that we targeted as having a chance. He was very interested in communication and getting into broadcasting. And, you know, so people at the university did a really good job of selling that and showing what that could do for him, being in Champaign and close to the Chicago market, the St. Louis market, and what that could do for him, you know, for preparing for life after football. And obviously the football part of it was big, but he wanted to be a corner. He wanted to be a defensive back, and we recruited him as that, but we also told him possibly as a wide receiver. And I think I said it last time I talked to you that we had him. We put him over on offense, made everybody work both ways that time, mainly because of Brandon. I want to see what he could do. And after one day, I said, okay, we'll move him over. He was special. And it you know, it didn't take a genius to figure that out.
You know, that's so interesting because, you know, that was before the days of internet recruiting sites and five stars and all that. But there were still magazines and this and that. And Lloyd was not. I followed it religiously at the time, and Lloyd was not, I think he was a two-star on one of the magazines I had, and, you know,
oh, really?
Just a guy who was listed in that. So it's always interesting to hear the other side of, like, no, we're head-to-head with Notre Dame and USC, and this was, you know, everybody knew this kid was a star. You know, how important is finding that kind of superstar go-to player in college? You know, obviously, as a fan watching these games, Lloyd was like maybe the biggest difference maker I mean, maybe Rashard Mendenhall reaches that level of he's so much better than his peers that, you know, you have something exceptional. But I mean, in the last 25 years, I can't think of a better example than Brandon Lloyd of like, man, it's 3rd and 7, but we really have a chance because this guy, it's impossible to cover him.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, those guys are rare, obviously. We had some other really good receivers. You know, the whole receiving crew for that year went on and played in the NFL.
Yep.
You know, Aaron Moorhead, Greg Lewis, all of them.
Walter
you know,
Young,
Walter Young and Brandon all went on and played in the NFL. I mean, so they were all really good. But Brandon was, you know, he was one of a kind. Like I said, he was very unique. You don't get guys like that very often. And when you have someone like that, it's special, and you can do so much with them. I remember one game we were playing. I think it was might have been that same year, the championship year. We were playing Northern Illinois, and we weren't playing our best game. We were struggling. It was a real close game, and we had a 3rd and 10 or something. And I called a play, and I just sent him deep, and I called a play, and I told Kurt, I said, I don't care what the coverage is, how many people are on them, throw it to Brandon. And he looked at me and I said, throw the ball to Brandon.
Yeah.
He dropped back. They had two guys on him. He launched it deep to him. Brandon jumped up with his 7'2" high jump ability and came down with the ball for a 40-something yard gain. And we went on and scored. And that's really what sparked us. So, I mean, there's not many guys I would do that with.
Right.
And just say, throw it to him. I don't care.
Right.
But yeah, he was that special.
Yeah. Okay, so recruiting at Illinois and bringing kids here, what are the difficulties that fans may not know about trying to sell that? Because obviously, you know, the talking points right now with Lovey recently being fired are the lack of Illinois recruits. And, you know, there's obviously a debate with that as well, because do you have to have a region? Do you have to build it around local kids? Or is it better to, you know, just find the best talent wherever available or to go get transfers? That's all the debate. So what is it that you see about, I think local recruiting needs to happen and there's talent in Illinois and that kind of the argument that's going on?
Yeah. And I think recruiting has probably changed some since 97 when I was, you know, took over there. Just because of things you said earlier with the social media and all the websites and all the services, rating people and everything else, it's, you know, there's not many sleepers out there. It's hard to find them because there's so much coverage on it, but there's still guys out there, you know, late developers and everything like that. So you got to do your homework and find those guys. But again, the state gets so over recruited that I think that's a challenge for Illinois. It makes it tough because, you know, people come in and these kids get enamored by something else. But if they take their time and look at it and you do a good job of educating and having a relationship with the coaches, if you can at least get them interested and get them to come down and visit, you're going to have a chance, especially now with the facilities the way they are and the commitment that they have, you know, financially and everything else to the program, you're going to have a chance. But that's the biggest thing is I always told guys when I was there, I just get into the schools, do your homework, establish relationships with the head coach, with position coaches, get to know these kids, spend a lot of time with them and just get them on campus. And that and it was true when we got them on campus, we didn't lose many of them. And now, like I said, it's probably even more so. But to do that, you gotta be committed to that area. You know, you got to be committed to the state. And I think first and foremost, you've got to control the state of Illinois the best you can. You're going to lose people, like I said, to Ohio State, to Notre Dame, to some of those people. But if you're working it, have a great relationship and doing that with the coaches, you're going to have a chance at them. And, you know, but again, you've got to get out. I assigned every coach on the staff that could recruit had an area in Illinois, and you know, we targeted it and we went after it, and I set a goal with our staff. I said, I want to get in every high school in the state of Illinois, you know, and see them, if not every year, at least every other year. And if we can't get to a place, because you're not going to get to every single one as much as you should try, but at least get on the phone with the coach and talk to him and invite him down. You know, so we did a lot of things to encourage the high school coaches to come to Champaign come see us, and we would go up to Chicago or different places in Illinois to put on clinics for, you know, with high school coaches in their area, and then try to get them down to our campus. I think that's where it all starts. These coaches get in the ear of the kid and, you know, generate some interest from him, you know, then you got a shot. But all the boys down to is just working it. You got to work the state. You got to work St. Louis. Greg McMahon recruited St. Louis and was phenomenal. I mean, he was like a king there. You know, he recruited so much and people loved him so much because he was there and he was visible and he was socialized with them. He would sit around and talk ball. Like in spring ball, when he'd go in, he'd stay, sit around, talk ball with them in their office till 8 o'clock at night, you know? Mm-hmm. But you got to do that kind of stuff to establish those relationships. And if you do, then you can get those kids. And if you get some of the top kids in Illinois, you're going to win. And you look at the kid, all the guys we had from Illinois on that championship team, not all of them were heavily recruited. You know, Kirk Kittner wasn't super heavily recruited. He had some offers and he had some people recruiting him. But, you know, he wasn't, as they call now, a 4 or 5 star. He should have been, but he wasn't. You know, Rocky Harvey had very few offers. Great player for us. Kerry Davis out of St. Louis had some, but not a ton. So a lot of those kids were not heavily recruited. Tony Pashos, Dave Dill, you know, who played in the NFL for a long time, weren't heavily recruited. Brandon Moore, defensive lineman, who played in the NFL for, I think, 12 years with the Jets, into playing offensive line in the NFL, was not heavily recruited. Eugene Wilson. So I can go on and on. Not all these guys were heavily recruited. But I think our coaches, for the most part, did a really good job at getting out and working it and finding them and evaluating these guys and seeing that they fit, you know, what we're looking for.
And is the benefit of doing that locally versus, you know, I think I'm not going to speak for Lovey, but I think some of the argument of concentrating on Florida and other things was that there's just so much talent in Florida that the guys who aren't going to Florida State and Miami and Florida, there's enough there that the second-tier guys are better than the guys that maybe they could get from Illinois. So is the benefit of getting out into local high schools that you're selling the locality of it? I mean, because in a sense, you know, the counter-argument to what you're saying is that talent is talent, and if you get it from Kansas or you get it from New Jersey or you get it from Washington, you just need to find talent where it is and have them agree. And I think because – so the fans have this phrase that's used on the internet called ABI, which is anywhere but Illinois. And often local kids will release their first list from some suburban Chicago high school, and Illinois is nowhere near the list, and the fans will just be like, well, that guy's ABI. You know, like the kids in this state don't feel toward Illinois like – Iowa kids feel about going to Iowa, or Wisconsin kids feel about going to Wisconsin. There's no like, hey, there's this kind of dream to play for the home state school. In fact, there's maybe a dream to get out of the state and go somewhere else, especially with Chicagoland kids. So given that restriction at Illinois, in your perspective, how is anywhere but Illinois overcome by the head coach at the University of Illinois?
Well, I think it goes back to what I said earlier. You got to work it. You got to go in there and be visible and be seen and be around and have the players, have the coaches help you, you know, at least convince the players, hey, you got 6 visits or 5, whatever it is now. You know, why not take one to Illinois or take an unofficial? Come down in the spring and take an unofficial and get the coaches. We worked hard to try to get the coaches to bring the kids down. Hey, why don't you drive them down and not just, you know, the top kid we're recruiting. Bring several of your guys down. Come see the campus. Come see it. You know, you got to work it because Illinois has so much to offer. And there are so many, you know, a lot of really good players there. Again, as I said earlier, you're not going to get every one of the top 5-star or 4-star guys, but you can get some of them. Mm-hmm. And the more you work it, the more visible you are, it's going to become more, you know, players will be more open to it. Now, again, that being said, you got to win too. Now, once you start winning and they can see that you're going to, kids want to go where they're going to have a chance to play and where they're going to have a chance to win. Yeah. If you can sell them on those two things, you know, obviously you can go in and say, well, look at our record. You're going to have a chance to play. But you got to convince them that that record is going to change. They can come in and play, but it's, you know, they're going to have success to go along with it. It's, you know, it's tough, obviously, but you got to work it. And there's no other way but to work it and do it. And you can do that and get, you know, if you sign 20 kids in a class, you're not going to get, you know, I don't think you want to get 18 from Illinois. But I think our goal was, like I said, we got to get half of our kids, you know, from the state of Illinois. Or, you know, or St. Louis, which we considered, you know, 3 hours away, real local. Yep. So we got to get at least half of our guys from there, and then we can go to Texas or Florida or California and get some guys. But that's just my philosophy, and that's how I feel about it. And I don't think you can say, well, you can go to Florida and get their second or third tier guys, and they're better than what you can get in Illinois. I don't buy that. You know, you can go down and get some good players. You can find good players anywhere. And there are plenty of them in Florida, obviously, and Texas and California. So, you know, we did. We spot recruited it. And what I told our guys, you're going to go in and battle all these schools for a kid. There's got to be a compelling reason for him to come, you know, to Illinois. Either his coach is from that area, or the kid is originally from Illinois, or maybe his parents, or there's some kind of connection. There's some kind of tie. If you can find that, what's the reason why a kid would leave Florida and the Florida schools or other schools to come up here? If you can find that reason, then, you know, then you have a chance at them. But don't waste your time on kids that, you know, there is no reason. So if that makes sense. But
yeah, absolutely.
You got to go get those guys. You got to get some from those states. There's no question about it. Like, you know, like we tried to do and like we did. But I think you build your program first from the locals, you know, the state and neighboring states. And, you know, you do it through the high school kids, you know, and that's just my belief. I think you can get a few JC transfers, or now with the transfer portal, some transfers coming in. But my philosophy is, you know, build it with the high school kids, get them in your program development. They have a sense of pride about your program. And that's another thing, you know, you get Illinois kids or kids from St. Louis, they know about University of Illinois and the tradition and, you know, all those kinds of things. And they feel something for it. You go get them from out of state, you know, they can develop that, but they don't have it right away. So again, you know, you got to get those, but it's pretty good. To me, it's a good mix of both, but start in your home area.
Let me switch gears a little bit. So let's just say you were, say you're at some coaching convention and whoever gets this job in the next few weeks, you have an opportunity to talk to that person. And that person says, Hey, Ron, tell me the drawbacks to Illinois. Tell me what I'm not realizing right now that I took this job that's going to be difficult, and maybe specifically difficult at Illinois. Like, what do I need to know that you know because you coached there for 7 years? How would you answer
8 years.
That question? Oh, sorry, 8 years. Yes. Okay. How would you answer that question?
Well, I think it's kind of what we talked about already. Just the history and the tradition of some of the other places winning consistently. I think that's probably the biggest thing. And then, you know, again, at a time when I was there, there were some other things, you know, facilities and some of those things. That's not a factor anymore. And you got an AD like the AD when I was there, Ron Gunther, ex-player. Very committed to winning, you know, was going to be in your corner, was going to try to give you, you know, what you needed to be successful. And now you got Josh Whitman, who's doing the same thing. I mean, what they've done with the facilities and, you know, the budget that they have, the money they have, everything else they have, you know, is going to attract a lot of kids. I mean, you look at those kids like facilities. I mean, I would always tell them, you don't go to school because of facilities. You go because of the people. You go because of the coaches and the commitment and what they're doing. But, you know, a lot of the kids, you know, that gets their attention. They look at these facilities and what they see. So I think they're doing a lot of things right. And obviously it's a very good academic school with a good history of graduating the student athlete. So I think there's a lot of things there you can sell. And that's what you got to do. You got to sell it. And you got to make people aware of it. Because even a lot of the Chicago area kids aren't aware of some of those things, you know, because like you said, they've never really given a thought to Illinois. They're like, no, I'm going to go somewhere else. But you can change that. It just has to happen over time.
Yeah. If you don't mind talking about it, I mean, you played a role in Lovey coming to Illinois because you had coached and recruited Josh Whitman. And as the story goes, that we were all told that he contacted you and said, hey, I'm interested in Lovey. Can you put us in touch? And you had obviously been Lovey's offensive coordinator with the Bears. So can you talk a little bit about that and that process and then maybe your thoughts on Lovey's tenure here?
Yeah, I played – I wouldn't say big part, just a small part. I kind of connected those guys, like you said. Josh called and we talked, as I've always, you know, stayed in touch with Josh. And we talked about Lovey at that time, you know, what kind of person he was and just everything about him. And I told Josh everything I knew. You know, I told him what I felt were positives, what, you know, could be some negatives and whatever else. But Josh and I had a good conversation about it. And then I talked to Lovey to gauge his interest in the job. And I talked to Josh and then I said, hey, here's Lovey's number. He's expecting your call. You call him. And then I was out of it.
Yeah.
After that, I was out of it. Lovey did call me one other time and we talked a little bit. He had a couple questions for me, you know, but that was about it. I mean, I just kind of got them connected. Then I stepped back and said, it's up to you guys. You guys, you know, whatever works out.
Are you surprised that it ended like it did? You know, after 5 years, you know, 1739 was his final record.
Yeah, you know, a little bit. I think Illinois can be a really good job, can be a really good place. And, you know, they had some success like last year, you know, some big upsets and things like that, but just sustaining it, you know, was tough. So, yeah, that's a tough question, you know, because I got a lot of respect for Lovey. I know he's a good coach and a good person. So, yeah, I guess I was, you know, a little surprised. I thought it'd be, you know, do more quicker, I guess.
Let me ask you a Josh Whitman question. You know, he has ex-teammates who, when he got the AD job, said, well, we knew this was coming. Like, he was always that guy in the locker room and, you know, he was either going to be the NFL commissioner or he was going to, you know, be the attorney general or something. But when you recruited him out of, you know, Purdue's backyard, basically, you know, this was right after you got the job. What was your sell to him and what was he like as a player for you?
Well, you know, Joshua, he was a obviously very intelligent guy, great player. He loved Purdue. His parents, I think, did some tutoring, or at least one of them did for, you know, at Purdue. And, you know, was very involved there in the school, but they really, you know, at that time they didn't use tight ends much. So they really didn't recruit him too hard, if at all. Josh would have to tell you that how much, but we made it a priority for him and made him feel that. And I think that's why we were able to get him. And Josh, like I said, very intelligent guy, thinks everything through, studies everything, analyzes everything. And Josh was, you know, we recruited him an 18-year-old kid, but he was more like a 28-year-old man. I mean, he was very mature, very methodical, you know, very intelligent. And like all those players said that, like you said, that you knew Josh was going to, you know, was destined to do something at a high level. Whatever it was, he was going to be extremely successful because he's driven. He's very intelligent, as I said. He's driven and very, very focused. So, you know, very, like, very mature, very serious. I would have to tell Josh all the time, Josh, relax, you know, relax a little bit. And, but he just, you know, just wanted to be successful and was a perfectionist at everything that he did. And, you could see that, you know, whatever he did, like I said, was going to be successful.
Okay. I got one final question for you. And it's not about any of this stuff. We're going to go back to September 23rd of 2000 to the Michigan game. I've actually asked Josh Whitman this same question. I'll just speak as the fan. So, Illinois fans still reflect back on that game that night. There's never been that much anger in the stadium at some of the fumble calls from the officials. There's never been such a mood of, you know, the roof is ready to blow off this place. When people ask me what was the best environment in Memorial Stadium, I always say that game. Like that game was loud and it was Michigan and And we, you know, you had the team on the cusp and you'd just been the bowl, and I'm either were ranking at the time, I think, yeah, like ranked 23rd or something like that. Or right,
I think,
on the,
so, yeah.
Yeah, right on the edge. And so this was this big nighttime matchup, tailgating like I'd never seen, everything else. But then, obviously, the officials missed the Anthony Thomas fumble. They missed the Rocky Harvey fumble a few minutes later. And then there's an apology the next week. As a coach, what's an apology like to get? Like, I have to imagine that's just salt in the wound of you saw the tape. You knew it was a fumble. You knew if A-Trains was called a fumble, you can probably, you just need one first down to win. You're going to run out the clock. What's it like to get that apology of like, oh, sorry, we really totally screwed you and you probably lost because of the officials?
Yeah, it was obviously, you know, I remember like yesterday, obviously very, very, very frustrating because everybody knew it. And, you know, the camera showed it, the TV camera showed it, everyone knew it. And it was just, I just felt so bad for our kids because they went out there, the coaches and the kids and the fans, you know, but everybody, the kid players just laid it on the line, gave it everything they had and outplayed a team that was ranked higher and everything else. And, you know, just to have it taken away by that, I just remember the hurt that I had for our players. And obviously staff and fans, but mostly the players, because I saw them in the locker room after that game. And that was very, very difficult to go into that locker room. And, you know, the hardest thing was to try to get them back after that, you know, the next week to you know, continue to go on and play. Because like you said, the atmosphere, the environment, the enthusiasm for that game. And we had one against Ohio State that we lost at the very end. And again, it was another kind of controversial call. And Walter Young, you know, caught one that looked like a touchdown. They ruled him out of bounds.
Yep.
And that was the same type of environment for that game against two really good teams. And I believe it was the same year, you know, to lose both of those. But to be in that locker room after that Michigan game when everybody knew, you know, that we should have won the game, that the officials took it, and, you know, it was hard. And then to get that apology, you're like, wow, you know, it's just, I can't explain the feeling, but I will say, and that you probably heard this before, that that game is what got instant replay in college football.
Yeah.
Now, it would have happened eventually, no question about it, but that's the game, because I've said this story before. We're sitting in our Big Ten meetings after the season, and let me go back. The year before in our Big Ten meetings, we voted on instant replay. Jim Delaney, you know, brought it up, and we voted on instant replay, and there were two people for it and nine against it. And I was one of the one for it. I'm not sure. I don't remember who the other one was, but I know it was not Ohio State and Michigan. I know that for a fact.
Yeah.
And then the next year, you know, we did the voting after that game, and it was 9-2, for it. And Joe Paterno spoke up at the end of the meeting. He goes, how can any of you vote against it? And Joe Paterno was adamantly against instant replay the year before. Mm-hmm. But now he stood up and said, after what happened to Ron and Illinois and the Michigan game, how can any of you not vote for instant replay? We owe it to the fans, to the kids, to the game of football to put in some form of instant replay. And they took a revote, and it was 9-4. The only two against it were Ohio State and Michigan. And Jim Delaney got a little upset with me because I'm sitting there and I said, yeah, if I was a head coach at Ohio State or Michigan, I would vote against it too, because I know I'm going to get the calls. And Lloyd Carr and John Cooper kind of looked at me, but I said, I know I would get the call, so I would vote against it too. And everybody else in the room said, yeah, that's right. So, but that game was very instrumental in getting instant replay. So we put in instant replay in the Big Ten, and then obviously other, you know, conferences followed. Like I said, it would have happened, but that was the impetus to get it in at that point.
Yes. Illinois fans hold that with pride, that we're the reason for instant replay in there. And in basketball, there's what's called the Illinois rule. After Illinois lost the ball out of bounds and it was given to Miami in the 2013 tournament, the next year they put in the, okay, you can replay, you can have the officials go to see who the ball went off of when it went out of bounds in the final 2 minutes. and it's still to this day called the Illinois rule. So
I didn't know that.
For Illini fans, we're very proud that because officials screwed up on both sides in both football and basketball, we're the impetus for these rule changes. So listen, there's about 100 questions I want to ask you about that, but I know you've got to go. So I really appreciate you doing this. I'll tell you one really quick story. You mentioned the Walter Young thing. On Illini board, there is a user, someone who comments, whose username on Illini board is Walt Had Possession, which is, you know, to this day, I was at that game. If there was instant replay in that game, it would have gone to another overtime. Like, he had possession and a foot down in that corner of the end zone. I'll believe that until the day I die.
And I will too.
Yes,
he did.
Okay. And, I appreciate it, Coach.
So it's, well, anytime you want to do this again, let me know.
You got it. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Sounds good. Thanks.
All right. Bye.